Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
How's your lovely wife, Linda?
Her name is Barbara.
Barbara, right.
Linda's the hooker I used to go.
Oh. Hello.
When you get a chance, glance at the notes. How's your lovely girlfriend, Maria? You know, right, the broad in the Bronx. Okay. With the bubble gum. Wow.
With the bubble gum.
How about Linda? How's Linda doing? Anyway, so, Linda, that's going to cost me a lawyer.
No, I knew.
Now the wife's going to ring from L.A. and say, who are you with, a Linda? What is this with a Linda?
No,
I know you were teasing. Yeah. You don't have to explain everything, good. Dave.
Right,
just get a better barber.
All right.
Anyway,
Day player on 720 WGN. So this Tuesday would have been the 92nd birthday of legendary comedian Don Rickles. And he always asked his friends to make sure that we keep his name alive. And tonight we're doing just that. Tony Opodisano was Don's and Frank Sinatra's longtime manager and a friend of mine. And he's joining us tonight. Hey, Tony.
How you doing, David?
I'm doing fabulous, pal. You know, I cannot believe it's just been over a year that we lost this comedy legend and a good friend.
Yeah, it really went by really quick. It's unbelievable. It's the only thing I was going to tell you is that that last project that we did together, the Dinner with Don series, that's on the internet.
Yeah, love that show. Love that show. And you know, it was nominated for a Webby too, which was pretty cool.
Don was very, very happy to have done that, and I got a beautiful letter from Martin Scorsese actually thanking me for putting that together, that it was something that will live now in posterity.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was very cool.
Yeah.
And it was just it was Don. It was who Don was. And for him, the guy never stopped working. And that's why, mm-hmm. I just had so much respect for him. I mean, really, all of his 90 years, he was always happy to get on stage and talk to people, and I think that's what was so amazing about him.
Yeah, it really kept his motor going, as he used to say. And it's really funny because when the shows dropped on September 25th of last year, we had a billboard literally in Times Square, and I got a visitation, I think, from Don at that point. He passed in April, and the shows went up on September 25th. He came to me in a dream, and he's saying, "Ah, great manager. Look at this, terrific." He said, "I'm dead 5 months." He says, "And now you get me a billboard in Times Square. Perfect, great, Don. Nice work."
Oh man. Well, your friendship and your partnership and relationship with Don started a while back, but I mean, you were working with Frank Sinatra, and that's kind of how you met Don. When did you start working with Frank?
Well, we met. I was a performer at one point in my life, and way back in the early 70s, I was working at the original Jilly's on 52nd Street in New York. Jilly, I'm sure your listeners know who.
Oh
Jilly
yeah.
Rizzo
oh
was.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm fond of saying he was pretty much the brother Frank never had.
Yeah.
And he introduced us. I was all 21 years old, and Frank was about to be 57. And we kind of clicked. And then loosely, I gave up my performing career in the early 80s for a variety of reasons, having to do mostly with the change in the business. And was getting into producing television and stuff like that. And Jilly was helping me secure talent. And consequently, I was spending more and more time down the desert. And obviously then was spending more and more time socially with Frank. He literally lived around the corner from Jilly. And then loosely he would say to me, "Hey, if you're not doing something such and such a date, why don't you come with us?" And, so loosely it started like in the mid-1980s. Somewhere around there, and then once Jilly passed, then we were kind of joined at the hip for the remainder of his life.
Of his career. And then was it at the end of that you started working with Don?
The first business interaction with Don, you know, I was handling some performers, again, in the 80s, along with Jilly. And I would put some of them on the show working with Don. I met Don in Lake Tahoe when I was still a performer. 1980, we were both working at Harris. He was, as he used to say, he was in the big room with Sister Sledge. And I was working at a mini showroom called State Line Cabaret. And that's when we first met. And I started working with him officially, helped got him on the show when the Desert Inn did a big thing for Sinatra on his 77th birthday. And so Don was on that show, and that kind of worked out. I was working with Elliot, as you remember, Elliot Wiseman.
Oh, yeah.
In those days. And so officially, the relationship business-wise kind of started with Don in 1993, 94, so it was around that. As a matter of fact, the last time both Frank and Don were in Chicago together was to open the United Center in, October of 94, I think it was, something like that.
Wow. Wow, yeah. And to be witness to all that must have been absolutely incredible. And you've got a great story I want you to share, because you've told it to me before, about Frank and Don having dinner in the Pump Room in Chicago.
Yeah, it was a funny night. It was like the Last Supper, which was normal, you know, for Frank. Every night was like New Year's Eve. And we were sitting at this long table, people on both sides. We were about 12 or 14 people. And kibitzing, talking back and forth. And Frank had ordered a minute steak, believe it or not. I mean, he could afford anything he wanted, but he liked minute steak.
Okay.
And they brought it with a little small bunch of French fries. And the waiter brought a brand-new bottle of ketchup over to the table. And Frank opened it, and he was trying to get the ketchup to come out. Never thought of sticking the knife in there to loosen it up. And he's banging on the bottom of the bottle trying to get the ketchup to come out. And finally, out of sheer frustration, and I think also to try to get a laugh, he threw it over his shoulder, because we were sitting against the wall. He threw it over his shoulder and hit the wall and went down on the floor. And everyone's looking like, oh, geez, he's in a bad mood of one. Yeah. And typical Rickles. Rickles looked across the table and said, Frank, would you pass the ketchup?
He's the only guy that could get away with that, you know, over the years.
He got away with a lot of stuff.
He did, but always with Frank, you know, always got away with it, whether he was on television, on stage.
They pushed each other's buttons. Frank used to like to do things to Don to make him nervous, because Don never knew whether Frank was teasing or not.
Well, you know, and as a fan, you know, I have to say I may have come on at the tail end, but I think the first time I saw Don was at a private fundraiser in Rosemont, and it was in the late 80s here. Mm-hmm. It was for, I believe it was for Governor Jim Edgar, it could have been back then. So it was a while ago, but then, I mean, I loved him so much, and I loved watching him growing up watching him on The Tonight Show and so many sitcoms that I watched him in. Saw him in Chicago, Milwaukee, New York, Atlantic City, Vegas, probably nearly 20 times, and first got to meet him in 2009, but then I met you about 5 years ago, and we would be making this annual pilgrimage to Milwaukee, which was awesome, right?
Potawatomi.
Yeah, the Potawatomi, yeah. And many times going with Bill Leff, who's here at WGN, and Jeff Hoover at WGN TV, and Rich Coes, and others. And I had asked you if we could run some tape and have a little conversation and an interview backstage a little more casually, which I had never aired before. And it was a great conversation about Don's career and how Vegas changed over the years. Let's take a little listen.
Jimmy Kimmel's adorable. I'm going to be on with him.
I heard that in October.
Yeah, Jimmy's a good guy.
And so October 10th.
So is, what do you call it?
Fallon.
Fallon, yeah.
We just did that.
I like Jimmy, too. He's good, too. Yeah,
but with Kimmel, there is a kind of kindred relationship you have.
Absolutely.
Like you did. He respects and honors you.
He has such warmth for me.
He does.
Yeah,
he's good.
Well, that's nice.
Part of that was Jimmy. If Don had a relationship, people joke about Uncle Frank. I mean, passed, Uncle Frank was truly his uncle.
You get a kick out of what I loved was the inaugural with Reagan.
Oh yeah, that's a classic.
I can't hear the audience. Was the audience enjoying that?
Oh sure, yeah, absolutely.
Because I can't hear it.
With the drape closed sometimes.
But that was a risky choice, right? At the time, that's another story. Right?
The story was that Frank went to the cabinet and said, "I'm going to have Rickles on the show for Reagan." And they said, "Oh, no way." And God rest his soul. He said, let me put it to you this way. If you don't have Rickles, you're not going to have me. That's what he said.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
That's how I...
But you knew Reagan when he was governor.
Yeah,
governor.
Oh, yeah, but the cabinet, he didn't have...
Did you see the... Oh, yeah.
Oh, you bet I had.
See, a lot of people in those days didn't know that. They thought they were going to come out and call you a...
Right.
Sure.
Which you never...
No, I don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, some of these young kids that come on strong, I tell them they're all great because they're at 90. I'm certainly not jealous. But, you know, they ask, oh, Mr. Rickles, oh, I love him, I love him. But some of these guys, they really... Ooh, but the audience laughs.
We were talking.
I can't, not, you know, how do you say it's lousy? They laugh.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
We were talking on the way here. We said there really aren't any... There isn't any other comedian that we could think of that does your kind of humor.
No.
Yeah.
Never will.
It's a very unique brand that you've carved that no one else can follow that path.
And some guys, I don't want to mention, who are kind of famous, try to do or say things like I've supposedly said. Mm-hmm. And the way they say it, you know, it's not something I rehearse. It's your personality, you know.
Yeah. Well, when you do it, it doesn't come off as crude.
Oh, thank you.
But when they do it, that's
there
the
are a couple of guys that try that, you know.
Sure. Like, that's their punchline, is to be crude instead of being funny.
I was watching two roasts this week, because I was doing my prep work for tonight's show, of roasts of Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, that was fun.
Oh, they were classic. Both of them classic. And of Martin Scorsese.
Oh, yeah.
That was even better.
Yeah.
For all the films you just showed up here, none of them were great. Yeah.
somebody get him a phone book so I can,
so I can see him. Exactly.
Yeah, Marty, those were a good time.
Do you get to
Casino,
watch
we had a great time in doing Casino.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you guys were going to Vegas in those days. It's a long time ago, but... It was so great when the mob had it, because it was so Vegas. It was really fun, you know. All the wise guys that ran the place. I worked for all of them.
It was for adults.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was different.
And now you know they have the kids and the families and the.
There's kids up at 1 o'clock in the morning pushing them in strollers through the casinos. I don't understand that at all.
No, the whole
and the people
picture.
Dress like
no, and sneakers and t-shirts.
I can't take it.
I said to one guy once.
Sorry.
I said to one guy once.
This is Milwaukee. I'm talking about.
I said to one guy once. He came in and he was sitting in the front line with a t-shirt and shorts and sneakers.
He won't be what?
And I said to the maid of D, I said, Charlie, why are these guys in front with him? He says, Don, you're going to tell him? He dropped $50,000.
Oh, wow.
That was his answer. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, you know.
Ethan,
but my day when Milton Perel, when I worked in the Sahara, it was like a Cadillac. I mean, they didn't care if he dropped $100,000. If he was in a t-shirt and a pants, there's no way he's going to get in
there.
I mean,
Bill
they
Harrah
ran it.
Was the same
they,
way.
They ran it. Sahara. They ran it with class.
Harris,
they did.
Yeah.
And that people child, dressed up. They came with jackets.
It was
a different world.
Yeah, right. Different time.
But I was there. I used to work in the lounge in those days. You can imagine, geez, if I had three shows a night, 12, 2, and 5 in the morning.
Oh, my God.
And then I do a classic thing which nobody ever did. I ran out into the audience a couple of nights, and I go, ladies and gentlemen, and loud. I want it stopped. I want the noise stopped. I'm doing a show, want it stopped. I get high rollers up. The whole place stopped. I said, if I hear any more noise, I'm walking out of here. You understand me? And so Milton Perel, who rest his soul, was the boss, he said, oh, tell him to come up to my office. And I thought he was going to get, funniest thing. It was funny.
That's
nobody
great.
Ever did that.
Oh,
awesome.
God.
And by 5 o'clock in the morning, you get guys, but the way I work, they became my friends. Hey, Charlie, suck the ice. I didn't even do good evening. It was all just talking to them, you know.
Sure, yeah. And some strippers.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the early day.
Oh, yeah.
Satina.
Oh, yeah. Satina.
See, I remember.
We all remember Satina.
Yeah, we all remember Satina. Mm. We all do. So have you seen, like, all your grandfather's movies from, you know, Run Silent, Run Deep?
Of course.
Deep? Of course.
I had to. They're classic. Tied me down and made me.
They're classic. Well,
on our MeTV station, we run all these old shows.
Yeah.
And you show up in so many of them.
Really?
You know, Get Smart.
Monsters.
Get Smart. I love seeing you with Don Adams. That's always so much fun.
It's funny.
It's great.
And Wild Wild West, I think.
Yeah, I did them all. You played a lot of great parts.
So much fun.
My biggest thing from way back is was Kelly's Heroes. I mean, everybody remembers that.
Sure. I remember the print ad for that.
And I had the best time in Kelly's Heroes. I mean, Carol's gone, rest his soul, and Telly Savalas was a gem.
But those were lifelong friendships for you.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tony, and I've committed to this to you a long time ago. Every year to celebrate the anniversary of Don's birthday, as long as I'm on the air here, let's continue to celebrate Don's legacy and keep his name alive, pal.
Well, he thought the world of you too, David. That's why you got away with doing a lot of stuff that most people didn't get away with doing. Coming into the dressing room, I mean, he really appreciated everything that you did for him, and had a soft spot for you and your listeners.
That's awesome.
Can't thank you enough.
He's a legend. He's a legend. Thank you, pal. I appreciate you joining us tonight.
Take care. Thanks again, my friend.
All right, we're going to air my original interview with Don backstage in Vegas in 2016 and much more coming up next on 720 WGN.
His mother and father are sitting on the porch in Nebraska going, "Why doesn't Johnny call?" And his father is not that way. Your dad is what, about 6'2"?
No.
Your father, try to think.
Yes.
See, when you get that rich, you forget the family. He's so busy in court all day long going, "Well, who wants to sue?" You got a lovely wife now, Joanna, who I saw.
I'm still trying to get the hassock from the last marriage.
Look. Now, John, you've had, not lucky in love, but now, thank God, you've met the woman of your dreams. Really.
Well.
Hey, folks, we don't know. He just calls Ed and I and says, "I met the woman of my dreams." And for his success, we go, "Fine, John." Ned, you've had, never lucky in love, but you're both handsome guys. I'm married 9 years. I want to be with you guys so bad.
But you didn't
get married.
I got a
Jewish wife that just lays in bed and goes, "Help me with the jewelry." Now, don't write letters. You taught me that. Don't write letters. Those of you in the Jewish world, if you are a Jew, I am proud. They always say we're rich. That's baloney. We're human beings, all of us. And I wish peace, shalom, to all of us.
Now, you didn't get married, though, until you were late in life.
Well, till I was what?
Well, I mean,
I was 38 years old before I got married.
Now, that's kind of long, isn't it?
Hey, but we discussed this before, and Ed, you guys got married, your first marriages, and I'm not being sarcastic.
38.
But I got news. When you're kids, you come out of college. I never went to college. I come up the hard way. You guys just skyrocketed. But I came out of the neighborhood, and they went, "What am I to broad?" And the broad was always like me, But actually, what happened was I met the most darling lady in life late night because I worked with strippers, exotic dancers, as we call them today. You know, with the cobra coming out of the basket. And the cobra went, "I want to be with you." And the broad went, "Challenge me, challenge me." It's a long story. And I was on the road a lot. Laying in bed watching a moth die on the lamp, And when you get like that, you find yourself on a street corner going, "Miss." And then I met my wife, who said, "I'm not some perverted jerk, I'm a person." And now she's sitting at home, just laying there, going, "He's so rich, he's so rich." And my kid's skipping through the house going, "Make more gold, Mommy, make more gold." See, they always say Jewish people have a lot of money. You're an Irish guy, right?
That's right.
Well, you never would have money because you're too busy spending it on beer. You just sit around the house in your bathroom going,
"What else is new, Frank?"
Well, I'll tell you what's new.
The following people will report to an alley in Brooklyn. Manganzo Mambananzo. Un papi Gumbaninzi. Alto Gambanazo.
Now, cut that out.
cancel. That's a cancel. See, with Frank, if I may say, Frank, because you've been singing and dancing and just breaking it up out here. With Frank, they always make it like gangsters, Italians are gangsters, Jews have all the money. Well, that's a fact.
Well, where's Barbara? Where is she?
Barbara's in the dressing room going, it's an exciting night.
Is it true you keep her in a vault?
That's a good one, Frank. That's good. Anyway.
I don't know about you, David, but I have a big family. I have a wife that she wanted to come to the show tonight.
I bet her she's a lovely woman.
She's sitting there going, isn't this nice? My dumb husband's on David, but I'm signaling ships. And she just sits with the jewelry, you know, in the nude.
Very lovely
just
woman.
To get me excited.
You know, that was the thing that really knocked me out, is I had not met your wife, and she was just wonderful. Couldn't have been more personable, more charming, more normal. That was the surprising part.
What did you expect to see? Some broad on top of the roof at Disneyland going, ha, 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 ha.
Well, yeah, kind of. That's what I expected.
We are backstage in Las Vegas at the Orleans Hotel and Casino with a comedy legend that has entertained us for nearly 65 years. He's an actor, a comedian, an author, an Emmy Award winner. Don has performed for four U.S. presidents, traveled the world with his lovely wife Barbara and his best friends Bob and Ginny Newhart. I thought I'd drop his name in there.
Sure. No, he'll check that out.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. And that is the legendary Don Rickles. Don, good evening and happy 90th birthday to you.
I always say me and Harry Truman, May 8th.
May 8th, that's the day. And I wanted to talk about your very beginnings. The very beginnings that developed into the Don Rickles we know today. You were the class clown, not great in school. You were the president of your high school class. Where did you get your sense of humor?
Well, you know, I really don't know. My mother was not a person that did humor. She had great personality. My father was a terrific salesman, but not a jokester, so to speak. It just came, you know, from being around guys. I was always, even in the Navy, and well, that's further on in my life. But when I was a very young guy, I always kidded around in school, and it became me. I really don't have a basis to say, well, my Uncle Charlie or something. But it's not so. I just, my mother encouraged it, you know, to kid around, not dreaming I would be doing
sure.
this.
Friends, family members.
Yeah,
that
right.
Type of thing.
I'd get up at the party, at the bar mitzvah, at the wedding, and say something.
Now, you left the Navy at the end of the war, and thank you for your service, by the way. You went to school at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, class of 48, with the likes of Grace Kelly, Jason Robards, Anne Bancroft, Charles Durning. Very prestigious school.
It was, and I was very fortunate because they said I'd never attain that because I was always kind of loud and strong. And it was a guy called Phil Loeb, rest his soul. Look how I remember his name now. He's a great director, and he passed away, and he... And I used to go, good evening, you know, from the stage and all. And he said, take it easy, take it. He said, but never lose that energy. And that energy was the basis of my humor, and that helped me a great deal.
And attitude.
Yeah. Well, see, my whole humor is based on not so much the joke, really, but, of course, it's the attitude of what I say.
You're not a joke teller. I mean, you know, I've heard you say, if you give me $1 million and go on stage, you know, you're a comedian, but you're not a joke teller. You did some impressions for a while.
Yes, I did.
In the early days.
Oh, God, yes.
But talking to the audience is really what made you who you are.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. And everything I've done to this very day, except for television, everything I've done on the stage is what I created in the car, in the house, the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's never been written on paper.
Right.
And I just added and added. Kept saying it. Became a performance.
Sure. And there was no Comedy Central, there was no Comedy Store, no Tonight Show when you got started. Comedians worked other venues. You worked burlesque houses and in strip clubs.
Yeah. I worked at what they call strip joints with the girls, Satina, taking off her clothes. And those days there was not that much clothes taken off. And I was like the comedian in between, you know, with the talking. Again, talking to the audience and making stupid jokes and throwing in a few impressions. And that's how I kept going in terrible places.
And there are places, three names that I've always heard you talk about, and in your book too. The three places were Slate Brothers, Murray Franklin's, and the Copacabana. The three names are always Johnny Carson, Frank Sinatra, and Dean Martin. And I want to first talk to you a little bit about the Slate brothers.
Yeah, well, there was a guy called Henry Slate, rest his soul. He was a good guy, and I worked for, like, peanuts, and I used to get dressed in the kitchen. You know, the fellow called Harry Goings, rest his soul, who was with me for 40 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And he used to help me get dressed in the kitchen. I always wanted to wear a tuxedo. That was my thing.
Yeah. And a real bow tie.
Yeah, and I worked at, and it's like a little store.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I started to do what I do, making fun of people. And suddenly, stars started to show up, little by little, you know. And they said, oh, Sinatra was in the other night, and Rickles did blah, blah, blah. Or so, or Charlton Heston came by, you know. And I used to do stuff about these and women and so forth. And it caught on, and it was exciting time.
Well, they wanted to be insulted by you. I mean, they caught on that was cool.
And you know, they used the word insult, and it's really an attitude. It's not mean spirited. I've never, in my opinion, never hurt anybody. You know, I never hit below the belt or anything. Even when it came to a mobsters who have come to see me in those days.
Sure.
And so I made jokes about them, but they laughed because it was kind and it was funny.
And you make
Mickey Cohn. He used to rest. So he used to come in and sit. I don't think Tony ever knew this. And he used to sit in the front with his dog. He had a dog, and he put the dog in the chair and sit there and laugh his hands on. And I would care about the dog and so forth.
Of course you would.
That's what he did. He thought it was a riot.
That's great. And I know Murray Franklin's came along, and your mother, your dear mother, God rest her soul, played a big part in getting Frank to come see you at Murray Franklin's.
Yeah, well, she went up to Dolly up at the Fontainebleau, as I say, in the performance. And Spoltzman said, if you could get Frank to see my Donnie, she called me Donnie. And she said, don't Etta, that was her name. Don't worry, Etta, I'll take care of her. And sure enough, a couple of nights later, Frank came in with a few of his friends, and that was it, you know.
And Murray Franklin's was in Miami.
Yeah, it was. And when I say it on the stage, I think I'm kidding. It was a rocking chair. That was the theme, all rocking chairs. And to this day, well, Murray's in another world now, but in those days he said, look at the crowd I'm drawing, meaning him. And I always went along with that.
He kind of felt like he was the Ed Sullivan, really, of Miami, didn't he?
Yeah. It was a big shot. Yeah.
But this is where, you know, Frank Sinatra, nobody messed with Frank Sinatra.
It's all over, Frank. I know you don't like to hear that. It's gone.
They said, Frank Sinatra's here, and I've never met him, you know.
Never mind.
And I get the chill.
You'll excuse us, won't you?
Certainly, certainly. Marco Mangananzo was hurt.
Ooh. Marco Mangananzo?
Fambino Bombazzo. Two bullets in the head Thursday. Now this you don't believe. Excuse us, Johnny, you're from the Midwest, you're busy going, is the truck loaded? Guido says hi. He hasn't had a chance to talk to you. And from Jersey City, your good friend, Bubani Umbatsa.
What's his
alias? He started his car with your album on, and now he's a highway.
How did you get away with that?
Well, he enjoyed me. I mean, we could have been having dinner, as I always say, and he'd be safe. And you know, when I was in Europe, when I say, pass the rolls, and he'd say, pass the rolls, then he'd say, you know, and I said, Frank, I'm talking. And he'd start to laugh his can off. He'd fall on the floor. When I talk, I said, pass the rolls, I don't care about Europe. And he loved it.
If I ever have trouble with my... No. The biggest argument I had with my wife, she said to me, I want to tell you something very honestly. That's the kind of wife, am I right, Johnny? Am I right, Ed? I married a Valium. And on the wedding night, she went, is that about it? I married within my range. Let me put it to you.
In your species.
I didn't go overboard with the other broads like some of my black brothers that go, yeah!
Yeah.
Jews don't do that. They said, we'll start in a minute. I'm going to go get a paper.
I'm a nice guy. It's
spite of what you heard, I'm a nice guy. You can bet your little bird.
It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. My conversation with the legendary Don Rickles on his 90th birthday continues.
TV producers at the time thought you were too hot to handle, but on the night of October 7th, 1965, you made your first appearance on The Tonight Show, over 100 appearances, as we were saying, over three decades. How did you first meet Johnny? How did that all come about?
Well, it was in New York. I don't exactly know how we met, but he heard about me in the Elegante. That was the place my manager owned, and I was very successful there, and people used to come and see. So, you know, word got around, and then his people asked if I'd come on the show. And we hit it off great from the very day we met. We, you know, if the paper said, that's the time when, if the paper said, we're going to talk about trains tonight, and he'd look at the paper and said, how's your mother, you know? And I'd say, you never liked my mother. Why do you bring that up? And we'd start to do 20 minutes about mothers, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And your mother never liked me. Why is that? You know? And he was great. He picked right up on it. And it was that fun.
And he was the kind of guy that made you funny. He was a great setup artist, and he wanted you to shine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And Johnny was pretty much socially was kind of a loner, you know.
Yeah,
we went out socially occasionally, but he wasn't a guy that participated. He was uncomfortable with a lot of people, and yet when the light went on, he was the best.
What's the worst place you ever worked? I mean, when you were just starting. Every time you travel with your wife, you always seem to travel with Bob and Ginny Newhart. Is there a reason for that?
Well, yeah, because I know he pays for everything.
No, he doesn't.
No, not really. No, I travel with Newhart because Bob and I have nothing in common. Bob, to me, is, you know, like, it's like being in a room with a dead fly.
Don't worry, Ed. You're going to be big. This, hey, eventually, if Johnny retires, are you going to retire?
Certainly.
No, you're not. No, you're not. I know what your wife spends. You are not retiring. He's got a wife that just sits up in Bel Air. She was an airline hostess, had nothing. Now she goes, send in another box!
Now, I know, and who opens for who?
Well, naturally, Frank opens for me.
I see.
I told that joke to Frank. And ever since then, I can't find my aunt in the Bronx.
And the Bronx, eh?
In the Bronx.
Same with David Letterman, and I know it was...
Yeah, Letterman had that thing, too.
Yeah. Did you, in the earlier days of knowing Johnny, did you hang out with him more, really, in the 60s, a little bit more?
No, it was never hanging out with Johnny. It was a dinner date, or doing the show and have dinner with him afterwards.
Okay.
Or when his birthday came, we were at the house, and a few people, but he was very, very, very closed with his life.
Yeah, yeah. He had notes, like I do, for every interview, but he never... And I never saw him at once in any of the footage I saw glance at the notes.
No. Well, he knew what he'd be up in the dressing room. He knew what he was going
to do. Yeah,
yeah. He knew.
Did he give you the name Mr. Warmth?
Yeah, he did.
He did.
Which I love.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Milton Berle, rest his soul, who was my idol when I was a kid. He was one of the king of insult, and a lot of people called me Insult Charlie, Insult this, Insult. And I hated the word insult, and some people still say, but it's not an insult, it's a put-on. It's exaggerating about all of us, you know. That's what I do. And Johnny made it Mr. Warmth, which was great, which has really stuck for me.
Just something you mentioned about Milton. You know, I know people have asked you in the past, who was your mentor? Who did you look up to as far as in comedy and so forth? You said Milton was always just an inspiration more on his timing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Great timing. And when I was a kid, he was the guy for me. I adored Milton, even in his later years.
Part of the Carson experience in every performance since is your song. Where did the song come from?
Oh, a guy called Key Howard, I think. He was a piano player that used to be with me. And he wrote it.
And that was
he said,
it?
You can sing, you can sing, you can do it. And I've been doing it.
And you've been doing it. You got away with the same type of rippers that you had with Sinatra with Johnny, telling him...
You've been married.
Married. Yes. Married. All right, all right, all right.
But,
you like the way I set this up for you? I'll just feed him in. You take
no,
the snappers.
We kid, because I know all your wives, you know. And now you're very, very nice. Well, I did. They were all friends of mine, and they're friends of yours. And
yes.
Till you got in court and said, you're going to take what? But, I mean, there's a limit.
But that was part of your relationship with him on the air.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was always a put down and fun, you know. And he always enjoyed it. He really did. And he was a great... He was the kind of guy, when something didn't work, he always made it funny. He had a great feel for comedy. He really did. He really did.
Do you have a, not so much a popular moment, but do you have a favorite moment out of, you know, 100 plus appearances on the show that you love talking about an experience you had on the air with Johnny? Like, what was your favorite?
Well, I can't say. There were so many wonderful times.
Yeah.
There was a time when he threw me into the pool.
The Japanese.
That was talked about a great deal.
Yeah.
And then there was one other time when I...
Well, with Sinatra, you know, when Frank was on the show, and he didn't make a lot of appearances on The Tonight Show, but then you walked out on stage. You came.
Yeah, that was another time. It's on the film, in the show here tonight.
One of my favorite moments of all time. Share with us that story that Frank told about you. You weren't married to Barbara yet. You were dating a pretty girl, and you walked over to Frank's table.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because the wife said to me upstairs, Don, stop telling that story.
Did she really?
I swear to God, it's the
best story.
Everybody
in
the world, the newspaper people, everybody picked up on that story. One guy, it happened in Shanghai. One guy said it happened in China. One guy said it happened in North Korea. I mean, from a little story like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's true. The punchline is, you know, it's with this girl, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to score with her, and he was in the coat in the sands in the lounge. I went over and said, he called me Bullethead. I said, Frank, he said, what is Bullethead? I said, if you could come over and help me out with the girl, blah, 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 blah. Well, okay, not right away, but I said, don't worry, I'll, okay. And so I sat down with her, and she said, do you know Frank Sinatra? I said, oh, sweetheart, come on. But sure enough, and she was getting all supports there. He came over and said, hey, Don, how are you? And I said, hey, Frank, can't you see I'm eating? and like you, he fell out living. Then he had the security cops, which nobody really knew, picked me up and carried me out.
There was another story, and I've only heard you tell it once, and I don't even remember what show it was on. And I was a kid when I heard the story, and you were talking about being with Jilly Rizzo. And after a performance, you guys were sitting down having some vodka, some Jack Daniels, whatever it was at the time, and there was thunder outside and lightning. Share with us that story.
Yeah, well, it was in Italy. We were sitting in a hotel and at the big bay window, and boom, 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 lights were going, thunder and rain. And frankly, we were all having vodka, just the three of us, and he kept saying, tell those reporters to stop. and it was raining. I said, well, Frank, I said, no, don't check me around. I want you to go out, you and Jillian. Tell them to stop it. I want to stop. Because the lightning was coming into them. And we had tuxedos on.
Yeah.
We went out soaking wet in the rain. Now you people, stop it. Stop it. Just stop it.
What would you like me to tell the next generation and more of these young kids about Don Rickles?
That was a guy that was interested in making the people laugh. The people and to do things they understood and to do things that are happening in their life and projected and exaggerated. That's it.
I'll trade you laughter for love. I'll trade you one for the other. Laughter for love. What can you lose? Some madness from earth, and for whatever it's worth.
Something else we have in common, flying on the airlines and listening to the airlines announcements and trying to pretend to ourselves that the language they're using is really English. Doesn't seem like it to me. About this time, someone is telling you to get on the plane. Get on the plane, get on the plane. I say, you, I'm getting in the plane. Let Evel Knievel get on the plane.
And I was ugly. When I was a kid, I never got any girls either. Now, one girl told me, come on over, there's nobody home. I went over, there was nobody home.
Because we're all getting older. I don't care. You're all sitting here. It's a very young crowd. Oh, she's talking about death. Let me tell you something. It happens to we all go through the same thing. At 40, you begin to lose your eyesight. I don't care who you are. You can't read the birthday card. At 50, the memory starts to go, oh, let's go see that movie. Oh, you know the one. Oh, you know what I mean. At 60, you start to fart. You just fart, 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 fart. Yes. And at 70, you lose your sense of smell. So between 60 and 70, it is a terrible time.
You're Chinese, right? Chinese? This girl here? If you're not, get your eyes fixed.
Hey,
State Player on 720 WGN. Very happy you could join us on this early Sunday morning. 312-981-7200. You can call, you can text anytime throughout the show. Now we're going to jump right in as I have some very special guests on the show tonight. So the art of stand-up comedy had its roots in the late 19th century in vaudeville houses, music halls, and minstrel shows, and in the 20th century in theaters and nightclubs. And the legendary names are endless, from the early days of Jack Benny, Bob Hope, George Burns, Moms Mabley, to the 50s and 60s, where stand-up really broke ground with George Carlin, Alan King, Don Rickles, Bob Newhart, Lenny Bruce, Jonathan Winters, Johnny Carson, Bill Cosby, into the 70s with the likes of Rodney Dangerfield, Red Fox, David Letterman, David Steinberg, Robert Klein, to the 80s and 90s with Jerry Seinfeld, Steve Martin, Jay Leno, Robin Williams, to contemporaries like Chris Rock, Louis C.K., and Amy Schumer. And hanging out with us tonight to break down the greatest stand-up comedians of all time, I invited four very funny people and very familiar voices here on WGN that also have a second life doing stand-up, and that's the one and only Steve Cochran, Bill Leff, Patty Vasquez, and Brian Noonan. What's up, everybody?
Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hello, Dave.
What is happening? So all your names are, of course, synonymous with the ones I just read in the introduction.
Sure. Absolutely. So true.
Only that there's a first and a last name. That's how they're synonymous.
No, that's not true. A lot of people confuse me with Moms Mabley. I get that all the time.
Nice. That's true. I thought you were Moms for the first 6 months I knew you.
Well, I want to start with you, Steve. You know, Bill told me off the air that he thinks your influence in comedy was Shecky Green. Is that true?
Yes. Well, obviously. I think that's clear. I think these guys would probably share the same sort of perspective, except for Patty, who's very young. She's 23.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's Pryor, it's Carlin, and regardless of the current spate of news of the last couple of years, it's Cosby. Those are the three giants.
You know, and Peoria, first of all, Richard Pryor came from Peoria, which surprised me. I didn't know he was an Illinois guy. He hit the stage performing for the troops when he was in the Army. I mean, that's how Richard Pryor got his feet wet in comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and going to see Richard Pryor, like, live on the Sunset Strip and all his concert films back in the day, that was really an event. You know, people looked forward to that. You don't see that too much anymore, but his stuff was just unbelievable.
He's the best ever. There's nobody that was ever more born to do stand-up than Richard Pryor was. Bill, I think you and I have talked about this off the air as well. But he can make the F-word sound like, it's something your grandmother should say just because it was so perfectly placed.
Yeah.
And, he was brilliant. He could do characters. He could do anything.
With both Richard Pryor and George Carlin, there was a version of them. The early versions of them were strictly by the book. They played by the rules.
The hippy-dippy weatherman and Ed Sullivan.
Yeah. And then they both realized, both Carlin and Pryor realized, if they were really going to make their mark in stand-up comedy, you got to play by your own rules. And they did it, and they did it fantastically.
You can't equate that with what you saw later when he came into his own. It's amazing.
But, Steve, you mentioned Bill Cosby. You know, I know there's so many people want to keep him off lists now. You know, when they talk about one of the best shows, comedy family shows of the 80s, or best stand-up comedian, you kind of have to separate the two because he did create a great show that has been, you know, at the top of the list for years. But he was also an amazing stand-up.
Yeah, well, I think he still would be. I mean, look, the bottom line is you ought to be doing it in jail. But having said that, yeah. He did a storytelling sort of thing at a time when everybody was kind of shticky and, went away for a long time and then came back and did the show, and the show reinvented him. But, Patty, you and I were talking about it a couple of years ago. Didn't you see him in Michigan like 2 or 3 years ago? And
I didn't want to go because I had already for years stopped liking him, the smugness, the condescending preaching to an audience, whether it was on stage or off. And I went to see him at the Laugh Fest in Grand Rapids, and honestly, I did not want to like him. He was unbelievable. He did an hour and 45 minutes basically on one topic, which was man meeting woman, from Adam and Eve to his first kiss to meeting his wife. And it was really just the best stand-up comedy I've seen live, probably in my life. And I didn't want to like him. But when it comes to Pryor, I think the other thing, too, is that he was so authentic and made himself so vulnerable. I don't think there was stand-up like that, that where someone just basically filleted themselves for an audience the way Pryor did.
Right. And there's only a few people who have followed that model and kept it up. I'm not a huge Louis C.K. fan personally, but I like what he does on stage, and he does a lot of that inside out, I'm so messed up. It's sort of awkward for a bit to even hear it and watch it, and then delivers it and kills with it. You know, we talk about Carlin. Carlin was like three different guys. Carlin was a radio guy, and then he was the straight guy Bill was talking about. And at the end, he was really mean. So I think every career has an arc, and all these guys do.
It was like Louisiana, Fort Worth. He was in Hollywood. Jack Burns was his partner, I believe, yeah, on the air back then before he went out on his own. But, right, it was countless appearances on Ed Sullivan, Merv Griffin, Mike Douglas that kind of brought him into the mainstream. And it was really that raw version you saw when he started doing, you know, live performances in HBO and stuff in the 70s.
Right. Well, he touched on this, and Steve did too. The arc, Bill Cosby getting so preachy at the end, and that's what I found with George Carlin, whose early stuff was just phenomenal. And then at the end, it was just angry preaching. It's like, okay, we get it. You don't
political
like the
preaching.
Man, and you don't like this stuff. And it's these guys who are geniuses, and maybe that's just the evolution of their genius. But toward the end, it's like, all right, enough.
Steve, you mentioned to me about Johnny Carson. You know, he's credited for launching the career of so many stand-ups, but really, he was a stand-up himself and doing it really every night for 30 years and kind of an unsung hero in that category.
Yeah, well, you know, I think really underrated as a stand-up because the best nights for Carson were when he bombed. And yeah, he bombed better than anybody. And Jack Benny was one of his idols. And he loved how Jack Benny would take that pause because Jack Benny wasn't particularly funny. Jack Benny set up everybody else around him.
Yeah.
And but he would pause. He'd take that pause. And until you've taken that pause on stage, you don't know how long 2 seconds or 5 seconds or 10 seconds is. And Carson was brilliant at it. If you want to see how good he is as a nightly stand-up comic, watch everybody else that still does it try to do it every night. I mean, Conan's been doing a monologue for 20 years, and he's terrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really hard to do. And Carson, I think, has always been an underrated stand-up.
Bill, they say that tragedy, out of tragedy sometimes comes comedy. What happened to you exactly?
Oh, so many bad things happened to me.
What happened? Steve, is this where we play emotional ping pong?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's weird. When I started doing stand-up and I'd be on the road so often, what happens is you're sharing either a condo or a hotel room with another comic or two, and they tell you these awful, awful, awful stories, and I never had any of that ever in my life. I was doing it because my life was really good, and I wanted stand-up to be an extension of that, but I would hear stories about people who go, yeah, I never met my parents. I know I have a mom and dad somewhere. I don't know who they are.
But you hear that in every comedian's
constantly
autobiography, that is exactly where they came from,
constantly,
and that's how they had to find humor.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was very fortunate. I didn't have that background, but I'd say easily three-quarters of the guys or women that I ever worked with just have a background story with it. You just go, oh, no.
But so you're okay.
I'm fine.
Okay.
Okay. Are you sure, Bill?
I'm sure.
You seem to be overselling it. Yeah, I think I'm okay.
Too much.
Yep.
Now you also.
Yeah, I'm totally fine. I'm completely well adjusted.
Yeah, I'll show you the test results. Everything's good.
All right. You mentioned Bill David Steinberg, too.
Love David Steinberg.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that every Sunday when the TV guide would come or the TV preview in the paper, I would look through the Tonight Show guests and I would circle the guys I couldn't miss. And David Steinberg and Robert Klein and Albert Brooks were three of those guys that if they were on the Tonight Show, there's no way in the world I was going to miss that.
Steinberg was, I think, only second to Bob Hope. He made 130 appearances on the Tonight Show. Yeah, and kind of a Chicago guy, too. University of Chicago.
Second City.
Second City, of course. He made a name for himself in the beginning, though, on Smothers Brothers.
Yeah.
Comedy Hour.
Right.
I think as well.
Right.
And Robert Klein.
Yeah, Robert Klein was one of those guys that you never knew. He just seemed to be so dimensional that you never knew during his 8 or 10 minutes, whenever he would show up on TV, what he would do. It might be songs. It might be observational humor. It might be political. And I just thought, that's perfect to always keep the audience guessing. I love Robert Klein.
He was the first guy to have an HBO special in 75.
Yeah.
Think about how early that is.
And can I say something about Robert Klein? During the waning days of David Letterman's show, he would bring on these guys for one last appearance. And more times than not, they were not good. They were guys that were really funny 15 or 20 years ago.
Friends of Dave.
Didn't do well. Friends of Dave's from the early days. Yeah. And then Robert Klein comes out and just tears it open, does 15 or 20 minutes of the funniest stuff I've ever seen. And that just shows you how great Robert Klein is.
Yeah. Patty, women who stand up sometimes feel like they have to cite a female comedian as their influence, and I know for you that isn't necessarily the case.
Well, when you would email me about this, I always have George Carlin was the comic that I would say I listened to the most. I had Carlin on campus playing him. I don't listen to music as much as I listen to stand-up comedy, and that was true in high school. If you got in my car, you would hear his list of dirty words.
That's awesome.
And so he was my favorite growing up. And then, but when it comes to inspiration, who inspired me to grab a microphone? It's Margaret Cho,
yeah.
And that always surprises comics because a lot of people have sort of developed a distaste for her and the style of stand-up that she does. But she was the first woman that I saw who was kind of telling stories that reflected the way I grew up, both as a daughter of immigrants, my mother is from Mexico, and also the pain of body shaming. And I had never thought it was okay to stand up and say something about that. It was kind of just the par for the course. You just hated your body, and that was it.
I feel you.
Well, yeah, she was real. She was real.
It was, yeah, I saw her and I was like, oh, I should do that. I mean, it really was an aha moment seeing Margaret Cho. Within a month, I had written my first 5 minutes. And I grew up watching Ellen DeGeneres and Paula Poundstone. But I was just drawn to comedy. To me, funny was always funny. And Carson, too. That was my favorite night for being able to stay awake. And I saw Roseanne's very first appearance on Johnny Carson and Ellen's. I saw a lot of those. It was just a great, to grow up watching that and obsessed with stand-up comedy.
And I've heard you say before, comedy's the music of life.
It is to me.
Yeah.
That's the rhythm that I really dance to.
David, it's a really underrated and probably the most underrated art form. It's never recognized at the Oscars. It's poo-pooed everywhere. But I can tell you right now, and these guys I know would agree, you can either sing or you can either dance or you can't, but you're always performing something that's prepared. You don't know fear, and you don't know stupid, I guess, until you've got up on stage in front of a bunch of people who've had a couple of drinks, who are looking at you going, make me laugh, monkey. There's nothing harder to do well in show business and in performing arts, period.
For me, I'm going to say it was definitely Carlin. I love Jonathan Winters in his early days. Rodney Dangerfield. I love, contemporary. I love Dennis Leary, Jerry Seinfeld. But one of the greats to me, and although he doesn't do stand-up, he's still a comedian on stage every night, is Don Rickles. That's who I'm talking to in a little bit. Steve, what are your thoughts on Don?
Well, I know him a little bit. I opened for him a couple of times in Atlantic City when I was probably 23 or 4 years old.
Wow.
And the great thrill of any comedian's life is to have Don Rickles rip you.
Of course. Of course.
That's how you've been accepted. And as you know, David, because you talk to him, he's a very sweet man.
Very much.
He doesn't like pants. He doesn't wear pants backstage.
No, he doesn't.
It's so funny you say that. They get wrinkled.
Yeah, I actually had...
It's an old school thing, right? He sits around in his robe, and I've seen him for 30 years off and on, and it's not getting better with age. But the pants are always hanging next to him, and he sits around in his robe while he talks to you. And I was just going to say, David, his daughter married a good friend of mine.
Oh, okay. All right.
So at the wedding, he did 20 minutes and basically ripped everybody at the wedding that came as guests. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
His robe was open, and when I looked at the pictures, his robe was open a little too much. I had to have my creative guy at work close the robe a little bit because
he wanted it. He probably didn't want you to crop it.
No, he probably didn't.
No, that's
intentional.
That age, you're proud of it.
That's right. Bill and I and Jeff Hoover, Rich Coes, we all went a couple years ago to see Don up in the Pottawatomie Casino and got to go talk to him a little bit backstage. And like you said, Steve, what a sweet guy, very, very humble. And you just said something to me off air about, for a guy that's been doing this 60, 65 years, he says something to us before we left the room. He said, keep my name out there.
Yeah, it was very important to him that night and of late for him to remind people that he didn't want to be forgotten. Yeah. And you say to yourself, how could anyone forget a guy who revolutionized the business of stand-up comedy?
Totally.
On paper, when you think about what he's done for 65 years, he goes up in front of a room of strangers and makes fun of them. He makes fun of what they look like and what they believe in. And you go, well, that could never work, but he's made it work. But he's so sure that once he's gone, people won't remember him. And that's not the case.
And, you know, here's a guy that put out Hello Dummy, you know, back in, I think it was 68.
Yeah.
And if you have ever gone and seen him, which I know all of you have, or worked with him, it's the same act.
Yeah, it is.
It's the same show almost.
Yeah.
You know what's great about him? And he still does this in Vegas. I don't know if you had a chance to stay and see the set.
Yeah.
He's doing jokes he did in 1965.
Yes.
He'll look around the room and he'll custom it up.
Yes, he does.
You know, he'll do something for people in the front row that he didn't do last night. And that's, I mean, that's a testament to who he is as a pro. There's a great book, and Bill, you and Wendy had on the author of this book, Cliff Nesteroff is his name.
Yeah.
K-L-I-P-H. It's funny, I can't think of the name of the book, but I remembered his name, and it's Cliff Nesteroff. But it's a great book on the history of mostly stand-up, but comedy on stage in general. Bill, do you remember what the book was even named?
I don't remember the title. I feel guilty, but I don't. But I do know that I know who you're referring to. Yeah.
Yeah, K-L-I-P-H, Cliff Nesteroff. If you're into this and you really want to read about it, it's a great take on everybody, men, women, children, from vaudeville till now. And I'd highly recommend it if you're into comedy.
Patty, quick note on Rickles.
Well, I've always loved that he and Bob Newhart, not only is Don Rickles a brilliant comic, but Bob Newhart's one of his best friends, and that just tickles me to no end that those guys hang out. I listened to a lot of Bob Newhart, too, and it's similar style that we were talking about with that pace and that patience with taking pauses. And Bob Newhart's bits about, you know, how bus drivers are taught and, you know, Abe Lincoln versus Madison Avenue. And there's just there's so many great albums out there. When Don Rickles talks about being afraid of being forgotten, there's such a wealth of comedy, both online and, you know, and whether it's albums or CDs that people have. It's just great to sit and listen to.
Don always says that being with Bob Newhart's being like being in a room with a dead fly, which is my favorite.
Huge compliment.
How about you, Brian? I'm done.
Rickles is one of these guys who, despite his wishes to not be forgotten, never will be, because anybody who's studied comedy, anybody who's been a fan of comedy, great comics who are performing now still look at him as a legend. They not only his longevity, but the fact that his appearances get better and better. If I see that he's going to be on a show, I make sure I either stay up or I record that show, because, one, I know time is short. You know, he's not going to be around forever, and every time he's on, it's brilliant. I've never seen him have an appearance on a talk show that was less than stellar. And, you know, I think that's kind of old school mentality for him to think that he'll be forgotten, but there's absolutely no chance that he would ever be forgotten.
And old school, he is the last guy standing, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and he kills with guys that aren't old enough to have ever seen him in his prime. He'll go on Fallon now, and Fallon could be his grandson.
Yeah.
And he just crushes it with Fallon the same way he did with Johnny, you know, 35, 40 years ago.
Sure.
By the way, the book I was mentioning is called The Comedians, Drunks, Thieves, Scoundrels, and the History of American Comedy.
There you go.
That's the book.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you
go. Ring the bell for the plug. There it is.
There you go.
And, Dave, by today's standards, you know, because you were sitting by me when we saw him in Milwaukee a few years ago, most of what he says is now wrong to say. You know, he'll say, there's a Chinese guy in the front row and he's saying this. There's a black guy in the back row and he's thinking this.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, you can't do that anymore.
He's the only guy that can get away with that.
He's allowed to still do it.
He's allowed to still do it.
Yeah.
All right. My thanks to Steve Cochran. Weekdays 6 to 10, Bill and Wendy, 10 to noon and 1 to 3. Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 11 to 2. Brian Noonan, Sunday nights at 6 and on WGN Plus. Thank you so much. That was a lot of fun, everybody.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Looking forward to Rickles.
All right, my conversation with Don Rickles coming up next on 720 WGN.